Welcome to What's Your Poison? This is John Savage. You can go to johnsavage.com to see all the episodes, the many, many episodes. Also, please rate, subscribe, and share because it'll be good for my ego. Welcome to a history lesson of South African music of the epic proportions. One of my favorite chats, this. So Billy Wanama, legendary jazz guy who I'd never met before, calls me up out of the blue, says he's seen a documentary of mine. We have to talk. We talk and talk and talk, get on like a house on fire and start talking about projects we want to work together on telling the history of South African music. And Billy's fire, bro. The guy is fire, not only as a musician, but as a human being. So just to sort of extend the conversation, we set up this chat. We speak an hour. We could have spoken for 3 hours. There is so much cool and rich stuff in this conversation. The history of Maskandi music, the history of South African music, King Kong, which I've spoken about before. Just amazing stuff. Also, a really sort of interesting take on Urban Village. And yeah, this is a great conversation. I learned so much having this. And I think I told him I would call it Volume 1 because I think we're going to do many more of these. What a privilege to meet the legend Billy Wanama, and this is What's Your Poison with myself, John. But I think you're gonna strap in for this. This is a lot of fun. What's Your Poison is proudly brought to you by Whiskey Brother. WhiskeyBrother.com. They make great whiskeys. They sell them. You buy them. You drink them. WhiskeyBrother.com.
Hi, John. How are you doing? What are you doing? First of all, what are you doing at the hotel?
Firstly, nice to meet you. And where's your whiskey, bro?
And then my shit. Yes.
Lucky to meet you. I mean, what a weird... You just call me out the blue. We end up chatting each other's ears off. And now here we are.
Yeah. I'm glad that it's finally happening. You know?
Yeah, sorry. You know, I'm in the middle of this quite a massive TV show production. And so that's why I've been messing you around, because I was coming to Joburg and then the shoot day moved and the flights moved and it's been chaos. But I literally got off at 8, raced home, and here I am.
Where's home?
Home is Cape Town. Where's your home? Are you Joburg or Cape Town?
Oh, okay. No. I mean... I never described my home, but yeah, it's here in Joburg.
Ah.
I never tell about where I live. You know, it's a personal decision. It's personal decision, you know, that I took. But I was born in Makulereng. Makulereng is a small town in Mokopane. You know, Mokopane was back then called Port Gietersrus. You know. So I listened to the interview you had with Steve Kekana. So now Steve Kekana was born a town before my town where I was born. And yeah, and later I moved to Johannesburg, and I've been here for many years, and I don't want to go anywhere else. If I have to leave Johannesburg, it must be somewhere out of South Africa.
What's your story, Billy? I mean, we've never met. I've checked you out. You know, I found your course, the Maskandi course, guitar course, yeah. And I've become an instant fan of all the stuff you're doing. And now that I meet you, I check we're on the same wavelength upstairs. We're like doing some. It's interesting.
We're on the same wave, you know, a wavelength, because. How I met you because I was doing my research, you know, and I'm a researcher. I'm always interested about the history of South Africa, especially South African music, but also to add that black South African music. And I found your name there. I'm like, who's this John? You know, I'm like, I didn't know this guy. I'm like, oh, this is the guy. Okay. So, my story is to preserve South African music, you know, and reintroduce it to the world. You know, I know that they only have the genes of it. They don't know the real core of what South African music is. And for the past years, you know, I met so many musicians, and you know, people who are like collectors and researchers as well. I read so many books, so I collected so much information from different personnels and different institutions. So that's how I meet you. I'm like, hey, so if I have to go on YouTube and subscribe to follow John, who is John? How is John having having to broadcast the Mahlathini and Mawuthela Queens documentary? This guy must be interesting, you know what I'm saying? So that's how that's how we got here.
I must just tell you one story. I used to be in a band many years ago called Cassette.
Oh yeah.
And we did a collaboration with the Mawuthela Queens, and there was this massive concert at FNB Stadium. We were the only Mlungus there. We came out just to do one song with the Mawuthela Queens. It was unbelievable. Yes. They are incredible.
So how long were you with the Cassette?
I was with Cassette for, I think we were 6 years, around 6 years. But even then, like you, I think like I've always been really obsessed with the history of our music, and also saddened, like just like how, you know, how our legends are so accessible because they are sort of forgotten. I mean, I find this is the thing, is the problem is our history is so amazing. Like you start figuring out things like, oh, what Quincy Jones and Kaifa Semenya were besties, and Michael Jackson's band from Off the Wall was Kaifa's band from Off the Wall. And you suddenly see like these guys, they are mega, mega, mega stars, but they're around the corner sort of unbothered. And in a lot of cases, I mean, guys like Tsepo Tsolo, for example, who's like struggled right to the end, you know, like had nothing at the end. And that really has boggled my mind. And probably like you, most of the work I've done has been very much focused on trying to bring back. I don't know if you've seen the project Amp Studios, where we have this thing called Hero Conversations, where we bring out the legends, we put them with current stars, and we try to do like a mentorship program.
I will tell a story about this later, but I want you to finish this. You know,
no, that's I wasn't going anywhere. I was just saying like, I'll just tell you one sad story because you're the only person who might relate to this. It really was. Yeah. You know, do you know Clubhouse? It's this new voice app where you can basically speak to anyone in the world. It's quite amazing. I spent a lot of time in this Clubhouse, and I was meeting some of the top producers in the world. And I ended up meeting, I won't mention his name, but a massive, massive, massive Grammy award-winning producer on the Clubhouse. And I got to talk to him in front of hundreds of people. And I kind of said, listen, here's the thing I really want to know is that we've got these guys here, right? They are legends. And let me tell you something, they haven't only influenced our music, they've influenced your music. They are so important. And they're not going to be around for very long. And in South Africa, there's no interest in them. So surely you guys, you know, the level you're working at, there's an opportunity here for you to come and mine some gold. And like there was probably, there were a lot, about 100 people in the room, maybe more listening to this conversation. And we got into a big argument because he said, why would I have any interest? There's like so much stuff here. Why would I have any interest? So I said like, Hugh Masekela. You know, he was like, never heard of him. And I was like, how are we having this conversation? And it really, it was disconcerting because I think that's the, you know, what I think you and I are saying is like, we see it, it's right there, but everyone's looking the other way. What's going on?
You know, When you speak about your studio, you know, I first came there. I did not even know that it was happening. I came there to play with Hosix Mabuse. So it was a time whereby I was doing some shit with Kulichana, you know. So I was there, but it was like I could say that, you know, people they meet at the right time, you know what I'm saying? So I don't think at that time it was for us to meet, you know what I'm saying? So yeah, so I was there, I saw your studio, it's amazing, man, and I was telling myself this was like a great initiative, you know. Where your studio is, it used to be a restaurant, and then later on when I came, I was like, oh, this is a musical studio. I was excited to say that, and indeed, you know, the reason people they don't understand why I'm doing this is because they're short-sighted. First of all, I'm not going to call out anyone. I'm just speaking from my observation for over the years. People are short-sighted in South Africa. They want instant gratification. They want, okay, let's work now. Money now. Money is, it's all about money now. Money now. They don't think about, you know, me, I think about 4 years ahead. I think about 10 years ahead. I think about 100,000 years ahead. So I started doing this thing 15 years ago when everyone was sleeping, you know, and, you know, people, they were just there to play the gig and go. But I asked myself that if I do a gig and go, you know, without documentation, what does this mean, you know? Because when I was a student, I've told this story many, many interviews, many times, that when I was a student, is that I was triggered that in the history module, it was that I learned about the Count Basie, the you know, the all those great
American jazz
evolution, and then when we got to South African part, it was only very very slim, like you just have like Dollar Brand there and Hugh Masekela and Mary Makeba. So now
that's the end, that's all of it,
you know what I'm saying? Now, I was curious that who was the guitar player who played with Miriam Makeba. So I was curious who played. So now I've been listening to records, because growing up, I grew up listening to old music, you know, and that's how I got to play with all these legends, because I was always the youngest one in the band. So I was always curious that who played the guitar here? Nothing. No one knows. Who plays the drum? Who produced the record? No one knows, you know what I'm saying? Like, who mastered the record? Like, all those things, they were lost, you know what I'm saying? For me, as a school, I didn't find them. And when I go, for example, and I research about, I punch on my laptop that Wes Montgomery or George Benson or Telfer Law.
You know who played the triangle on the thing?
you even a shaker, you know who played the shaker? You know what I'm saying? But no, you see, then that thing bothered me, and then I took a stand. Since from then, I've never looked back. I just want to make South African music to be heard to the world.
Wasn't you? I think you mentioned Rob Allingham. You know Rob. Wasn't he the guy who was kind of tasked to go through all the old tapes and identify who was playing on everything for the Gallo Library?
Look, you know, I'm privileged. I'm gonna say this over and over again that I'm so much privileged. You know, my privilege it goes to from being a practitioner, playing with these musicians, traveling with them, touring with them, telling their stories without a confrontational interview. You know. And I was quite, you know, involved and interested, you know, and with what was happening. I will interview, I'll ask them questions, but I will write them down, you know, like everything they say, I will take notes and write them down, like, oh, this is what's happening. So now the problem it was then now to find the reference of the music. And by fortunate that I was fortunate that one of the guy was supposed to do a lecture on heritage music. He was not available for the gig, and then I was standing in for him, and because he was going to was going overseas, and I did a lecture at this event about South African music on Heritage Month, and that's when I met Rob Allingham, because I played the guitar. I did like a minimal performance there. I played the repertoire of Mahlatsi Motlekgwens. I played different repertoire, and Rob Allingham, in the interval, this ladies came to me like, we're working there, the ushers, they're like, there's a guy who's looking for you outside. What you call him, Lungo Funai? I'm like, who's this white guy? Oh, shit. And then I went there. I meet this old guy. It's like, yo, Billy, what's up? And then, so I like what you did today, man. You played the music that took me way back. And I'm like, who is this guy? I did not know of Rob Allingham until when I started researching and I was reading books that he was being cited, you know, so many books. If you read so many books, like, a book like this, like Marabi Nights, he has been cited. So many books, he has been cited as a person who's knowledgeable about that. And I found out that this guy, he was an archivist at Gallo Records. Then this guy now, he said to me, you are Munama. My surname is of... I'm related with ancestrally. I'm related with like Munama, who was the drummer of Maotela Queens, and Mokhonatsohle band. So this guy is like, man, who is this guy? Munama, is your father lucky? So now he's like, I think it's this thing. Wow. Like, oh, I know your father. I'm like, no, he's not my father. But well, you know what I'm saying. So and then this guy will exchange contacts. And then subsequent from that, I met a guy by the name of David Thompson. Dave Thompson.
Can I just say, me and Dave Thompson are like besties. I love that man.
So you see, we were bound to meet, me and you. So then Dave Thompson is like, hey, man, are you related with like Munama? I'm like, no, guys. I met Dave several times, man. He relocated to Australia, and yeah, every time he's in Joburg, he will call me. He will like, Billy, let's meet, man. Let's meet, and we talk. That's when I got to understand the depth of this music and the history side of and the business side of it, of what the things that were not documented then, and then. I did a gig some years ago, I think it was in 2014. And then Rob Allingham, he brought Lucky Munama at my gig. It was for the first time I met Lucky Munama.
What?
Brought by Rob Allingham.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, you know, one of my, I tried for many years unsuccessfully. Just going back to the discussion about this, the story that has never been told, that I think is like the most brilliant story never told. And I try to get the rights to it, but I failed miserably. And I've been trying to figure a way to tell the story without needing the rights. And that is the story of King Kong. Yeah. And it's such a brilliant story. And the thing about it that's so interesting is that the story of King Kong himself, the boxer, kind of emulates the story of King Kong, what actually happened with the theater production and what it did. It's like sort of a tragic but brilliant story. But it's such an important part of our history that could be dramatized or at least told in a way that's compelling and cool. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I don't know. What do you think about that?
You know, you asked me at the right time. You know, because right now I'm reading a book of Mary Makeba, the autobiography. You know. And I've read a couple of autobiographies in the past. And I was privileged as well to be part of the production. I was in the band of the King Kong, you know, the musical.
The latest one, the one that was in Cape Town now.
It was, I did the Joburg one.
Oh, I know the drummer, Unity. That drummer, yes. Unity, he's a good friend of mine.
Oh, yes. But we played with a different drummer from Joburg. I think the guy Minyato, yes, he left. He left then, and then he went in Johannesburg. It was the rhythm section. It remained the same. So I was the guitar player, and the drummer was new in Johannesburg as well, and the trombone player, you know. But the rest of the guys, they remained from Cape Town production, from Fugat, yeah. So the story of King Kong, you know, I was privileged to be part of it and to have played that music, because that is the 1950s, you know, so that when we're talking about jazz opera, so now that was the rising of what is called African jazz, you know. People like the, you know, Albert, you know, I forgot his name, Albert Herbert, something like that. Yeah, Albert Herbert. They had like, you know, a concept called African jazz and variety. So now in the early 50s, African jazz and variety, then it was like kind of a theatrical concept. So now it had all the different musicians from the Miriam Makeba, Victor Ndlazulani, you know, the Hugh Masekela, all those guys. It had different, I think for me, actually, to quote one of the author who wrote that, Christian Ballantyne, he says that that era, it was emancipation of South African political climate, you know. So King Kong, I when I was working with Jonas Gwangwa, then I got to learn other things, you know. He told me that there was a guitar player by the name of General Duze. He was a guitar player in the King Kong. So many bands, the Manhattan Brothers, the, you know, Miriam, you know, it was like a melting pot of South African, Black South African musicians. Lemmy Special Mabaso was there. Oh, man, like, that is what I'm saying. It was a melting pot of South African music, and it contributed as well for in terms of socio-political times of South Africa, because many people, they left with King Kong, they never came back to South Africa. They went exile. You know, for them, it was like black people musicians. Then they were like, "Oh, we're going to London. We are not going back to Johannesburg." So King Kong, it is a revolutionary, musical. For me, it's not just a jazz opera. And then the story of Ezekiel, the boxer,
Ezekiel Dlamini. So that story has never actually outside. So the King Kong play is kind of fun, light version of the story itself, because this is the thing. I went on a deep dive for about 2 years studying Ezekiel Dlamini, and there's very little information about him, but I went all to the sources to find out, and like, you could write a movie just about Ezekiel Dlamini. That story is unbelievable, and again, has never been told, and it's so dramatic. There's just so much there.
There's so much there, but now people who don't know it, they just need to know that these were the people from the Sophia Town, you know what I'm saying? And Sophia Town, then the nationalist government, they never wanted to see a cohesion, you know, a social cohesion whereby black people, a racial cohesion, rather, let me say, black people, Indians, whites, living together in the same community. They're like, you know what, we're just gonna mess this thing for everyone. That's why people, they moved to Soweto. But now Ezekiel, then he had a girlfriend. So now this girl, he was confined an opportunity to go to abroad to participate in a boxing competition. And that thing killed him, I think, psychologically, that he ended up being abusive and it turned him into a drunkard, you know. So the apartheid government confined him from going to participate in a boxing matches. So that thing just demoralized him, you know, I think, went into an alcoholism and started abusing his wife. When he was in the midst of abusing his wife, he one day then, because he was jealous, you know, of, you know, he was a jealous type, then insecure man. Then one day he beat his wife to death, and then that's how he got arrested. You know, I can say that thing in summary about Ezekiel, as far as I remember it.
You know, I mean, it's such rich. It's nobody knows this stuff. There's so much to tap into here. I mean, and even the story of the king. I don't mean the Ezekiel Dlamini story is amazing, but the King Kong story, not just the sort of, I mean, the Todd Machikiza part of it, building it into something, but how it sort of, what it did for the world, what it did for South Africa, and how it kind of came back later and didn't really, and died. It's kind of also been a roller coaster ride, the journey of the theater, of the production. There's just, I don't know. I've been trying to think of a way to tell both stories at the same time, like make a film about Ezekiel, but tell the story of King Kong, the musical, and how they parallel each other.
This article that I read, I was reading for, I think it was like 2 weeks ago, it talks about the jazz in exile, you know. So after after the King Kong went to London, and the musicians they followed after the Dudu Pukwani, and the Chris McGregor, they followed. They were invited by, you know, Abdullah Ibrahim. So Abdullah Ibrahim, he went there first, and then he played at the festival there, and he invited everyone. All those guys, the Dudu Pukwani, the Lucky Ranku, they left. The Ernest Motle, there was a contrabass player, Ernest Motle, they left. They never came back. And many, some Makaya Ncholo, you know, and some of those musicians, the Blue Note.
Yeah.
The Blue Note band. So the Blue Note, when they left here, they left because they were invited to play at the festival. And they were like, no, we're not going back to South Africa. Because of the political climate that was happening during this time, and at that time, we understand that it was during Black Consciousness time. It was around when everyone Mandela was, you know, it was at the time of Maibuye Africa, you know, whereby Mandela was getting arrested, and you know, Stephen Biko, he was also confrontational with the nationalist government at that time. So it was a very difficult time. And then at the same time, there was Sharpeville massacre. You know, in the 60s, you can imagine what was happening. And then you look back, like, no, I'm not going back home. So it was a very difficult time, and I think these are the stories that we need to tell. You know what I'm saying? As I mean, authors, we respect authors. Like, I read different books, and I respect different authors. You know, but if we can make it like in a short, you know, like, you know, in visual, some other people, they grab a story by visual. Others, that is why today they are podcast. Other people, they just want to listen. They don't want to read, you know. So we need to create dimensions in telling these stories.
Maybe we should collectively do a podcast. Maybe we should, you and I, start a podcast and tell these stories, or bring on, I don't know. I mean, it's just exciting talking to you, really exciting.
No, but you see, My podcast, I'm telling you, it will end because now the people that whom I want to invite here, they are learned or rather well informed. You know, they might leave me while I'm on podcast like this, like doo-doo, bye-bye. I don't want to have that kind of situation because they don't want to be contradicted because they know what they know that ends there. You know what I'm saying? So we have those kind of egos that we need to massage, you know. So it's, I would want to do one, but it's not practical.
Tell me a bit about you, Billy, where you come from and your jazz career is amazing. Did you tell me you've written a book as well? You're prolific, yeah. Bro.
Yes, thank you so much. You know, where I come from, it's far. I come from far. I was brought by different people. You know, my mother, she's my hero. You know, my father died in 1992. Though my mother died in 2010, however, he raised me, you know, well, and he introduced me to church. And when I went to church, that's when I got introduced to music. Mm. All the greatest singers, the Luther Vandross, the Whitney, the Thelonious Monk, you name them, the Miles Davis, all those people, all those greatest musicians in the world, they have been indoctrinated with church music. They come from church. Because let me tell you why I'm saying church music is because when you play at church, there's no one who's judging you. When you play at church, they give you an opportunity to even take a chance. No one is gonna say that, oh, you played a wrong note, you know. In Zulu, there's a saying that bimbela inkosini, you know. So when you play a wrong note, you play a wrong note in the spirit, in the presence of the Lord, you know. So I grew up in that, and my church, it was Mpatanga orientated. You know, so when we talk about Max Mangwane, my first approach of playing guitar, I was introduced to that kind of style of music. But there was a guy who was not celebrated, who used to play on the level of Max Mangwane. His name was Nicholas Ntuli. And, Nicholas Ntuli and Viv, you know, there was another one was playing rhythm guitar by the name of Patrick Ngube. So now, you know, those musicians, they were recording with the church choir for some time. They were recording with Gallo Records. They were with EMI as well. And, you know, the kind of a repertoire that we were playing, it was that kind of a repertoire of Mahlathini and Motela Queens, you know. And later on, when I think maybe I'm privileged because I grew up at the right time, because in the 90s, jazz music, it was very visible on the television, you know, and there will be like televisions like the Felicia, Melodin, whereby they used to, you know, before the news, before the prime time, they will introduce a new single, you know, from a jazz artist. And the Alan Quellers, when they came up, I'm like, I wanna play jazz. And then that's how my mind changed, because I couldn't understand what they were playing, given the foundation that I have of Umbakanga, you know. And then I switched immediately when I had Alan Quella. I saw the likes of the Jimmys, you know, all the Slylaws, and many other folks, you know. And I said, I'm going to school to study this. And when I was about to go to school and study that, when I finished my matric, I then encountered a problem with my mother. I said, I'm not taking my child anywhere to study music. So I was like, Jesus Christ, how am I going to survive? Because you're smart. Yeah. Because remember, at, at that time, they will say like a jazz musician found died like a pauper. Imagine you're a parent and then you read something like that.
Of course.
And
the child wants to I'm saying your mom was smart and she's right.
Yeah, she's right. You know what I mean? She's right. She's very right. And, you know, there were so many times whereby I thought of her words that she was right. You know, because I've encountered difficult situations, you know, as I was growing, and I'm still growing, and I'm still going to I'm still going to encounter those kind of situations. So now I studied political science. Then I was like, oh, Billy, what is it that you are passionate with except playing the guitar? I'm like, I was interested in politics. I could remember the dates. I could remember the personnel, I could remember the areas. So those are very key points when you are interested in history. You can't tell history without not remembering the dates and the personnel. Forget about it. So because when I was growing up, we used to watch one TV. There was no such thing called TV room for the kids and all that. We all sitting there watching news. You know, and we will see all the political climate changing. And I was young. I saw all this thing evolving post apartheid. You know, and I was like, my goodness. So at school, there were musicians playing. I mean, at varsity, and then I saw these guys carrying guitars. I'm like, no, guys, can I follow you? They're like, no, what are you doing? And then I started playing guitar. And then, I mean, at that time already I was playing, because I started playing guitar in 1997. So now already I was playing in bands, different bands. And then I decided that, you know, what is it? I'm going to fail intentionally so that I can boycott going back to school and study politics. So wow. I said to my mother, like, yeah, I'm not going back to study politics anymore. I'm tired of politics. And you know, I enrolled at TUT, but at TUT at that time I wanted a black teacher. You know, I was like, these guys, they're telling me about John Scofield. What the hell is this? No, I want a black teacher who's going to teach me black music, you know. And then I'm like, no, I'm leaving this thing. And I went to Central Johannesburg College. That's when I met amazing teachers, you know, who taught me, you know, African jazz. I mean, like American jazz, you know. But at that time, I was already the hottest guitar player. I was playing in bands and I was a session musician at that time. I was playing umpatanga. I was, you know, like my lecturers, they were like, Billy, how are we going to teach you? I mean, on my second year, they were asking me, like, how are we going to teach you? Because already then I was working with the Themba Mkhize. I was playing with the giants of this industry. So, and when I get to school, that's when, because I was conscious already, that because I studied politics, then I was conscious already. I'm like, why there's no South African repertoire in this school? I cannot learn how to play Fly Me to the Moon for the rest of the year. You know, I cannot learn how to read about Count Basie to Thelonious Monk, the West Montgomery, you name them, all those personnel, the Errol Garner, the Scott Joplin. You know, we have evolution of music in South Africa as far as from the choral that was introduced by the Western, by the European, they introduced the Western harmony. I mean, the Totma Chikiza, they're the people who learned that harmony from the Enoch Sontonga, who wrote Nkosikelele. The man, you name them, all those guys, they were like baptized with that European harmony. That's why we sound like this today. That is why the national anthem sounds like this today. You know what I'm saying? So now I was conscious. I was like, why are we sounding like this? And that's when I decided that I'm going to write a book one day that is going to speak in depth about the history and the undocumented groundbreaking guitarist whoever came out of this country. Because when I was a student, I used to use what is called a play along by the educator from the States. Oh, dear Lord, I forgot his name. Oh, his name is gone. But he had like a study guide, like it was like kind of a tutorial book. And I'm asking myself, if I'm learning from this book, why in South Africa I don't have this kind of book to learn about South African music? I went around the whole library, I researched.
There's just nothing. There's nothing. Yeah.
Oh,
and the name, and the name wrote of the it. Guy.
Yeah, the name of the guy is A.B. Episode. Okay. Jamie Episode.
So what is the title of your book?
The book is Introduction to South African Guitar Styles. So that is a volume one, you know. So I want to have a volume two, because volume two is gonna okay. Maybe let me speak about the volume one first. So the volume one it is documenting from the 1930s to the 1980s. Then the volume two it will compose of the documentation from the 1990s to 2000 to millennium.
Because even those 1990s, even that stuff isn't documented at all. Like, I think there was that one. I remember there was one book. I don't know if you remember. It was a white, thin book that had all the names of all the artists, like in South Africa in like the 90s. But that was it. It was just their names and like the bands that they were in. Have you ever seen that book?
I'm not sure if you're speaking about the same book, but are you speaking about the book that was written by Yvonne? I can't remember what's her surname, but Yvonne, she did almost kind of the same book. Mm. She was assigned by I mean her book was commissioned by SABC.
Could have been.
So I will check it out. I'm always willing to to find out new things, you know. So yeah, I will check it out. So I mean, like when you look at from the 30s, to the 80s, the guitar, how it evolved, you know. So I'm breaking it down from Umaskanda. So first of all, we need to educate people. It was not Maskandi. It's Maskanda. It's Maskanda music. So now the people of the Rhodesia and of Zimbabwe and also in South Africa, it starts from the street players, and the street players were moving around seeking for, you know, gold, and they were basking at the train stations, you know, at the street corners, at the mines and so forth, you know, to just get a penny so that they can buy booze, you know, and buy food. It's like a hand-to-mouth kind of a situation. Mm. And the kind of the style that they were playing was called Umaskanda. That was in Ndebele from Zimbabwe. In South Africa, that music is called Umaskanda. Maskanda, it derives, is a borrowed word from Afrikaans name meaning musicant.
Right.
So musicant, it's not musicanti, musicant. They take that thing. So in theory, is borrowed from where? It's borrowed from all the street players who are playing that music, and then Afrikaners, they said, no man, there's a musicant. So musicant, it means in English, it's called a musician. So when you say that you're a musician, say that you're a musicant.
Yeah.
And like, Umasiganda, you know, so it evolved from then. And then the guitar players coming from Zimbabwe who influenced, who contributed successfully as the early recordings. Actually, there was a guy by the name of Hugh Tracy. So Hugh Tracy.
I know Hugh. I used to be in a band with Hugh Tracy's grandson, Jeffrey Tracy.
So Hugh Tracy. When Eric Gallo, when Eric Gallo established the Gallo Records in Gallo label in 1932, he established Gallo, and then but now it had a subsidiary like the Gallo Tone, you know what I'm saying? So now that was the change of the musical landscape in South Africa. I remember this article, it was written African Music for Africa. African music for Africans. Then that's when, you know, musicians, they arise from then. I mean, the first successful Maskanda recording artist, John Bengu, Pusi Shugela. He was a revolutionist. And then there was another one from Zimbabwe by George Sibanda. He recorded a hit called Gwabi Gwabi. And then there was Josiah Hadebe as well. He was from Zimbabwe, you know. And then we had like guys who introduced the picking style, Petrus Mtambo. So now you see, I'm taking all these things until we get to the General Duze, the jazz man of that time. You know, the Stanford Tsiu, he was a guitar player from Lady Brand down in the Free State. And then there was Enoch Tabete. He was a composer as well. And then if every time you listen to a record and it was a Hawaiian guitar, you must know that Enoch Tabete, he was born 1924. And also General Duze, he was born in 1924. Something about special about General Duze was that he was an actor as well. And because he was featured on the film called Jim Comes to Joburg.
I've never heard of
that's
that.
That's how. Well, you know,
Jim comes to Joburg.
Jim comes to Joburg. President.
I'm putting in my gym.
It was a very successful film at the time. It was a very successful film at that time. So I'm the people like, Jim comes to Joburg. The people like the Dolly Ratebe, they were in that film. They were stars. I mean, like General Duze, he was with the Shanti towns. There was a shanty town. Now, let me tell you something. There was a guy by the name of Willa Tele, he was a penny whistle. A penny whistle back then, it was not that kind of a melodic phrasing like doo-re-doo-re. It was like in a boogie woogie kind of a trip, you know what I'm saying? The producer of Jim Comes to Joburg, they met with General Duze. This guy was a guitarist, he was a singer, he became an actor. So he was a successful guitar player of that era. So now, you know, I'm taking you through the
I love it. I'm getting a history lesson here.
Yeah.
I love it.
So anyway, yeah. So it's just a bunch of evolution. And then so now the African jazz. The African jazz, it had like about two segments. There was a segment of the early 1940s into the 50s. So you find the people like the General Duze, the Enoch Tabete, the Stanford Tsiu. Those guys, they were playing a rhythm guitar, but they were vamping. It's called vamba, you know. So now, these guys, it was not kind of It's not kind of a rhythm guitar, like it was. So it was that kind of a rhythm guitar, and this guitar played. It was a revolutionary guitar because it substituted the piano, the role of the piano in the music.
Right.
So now, so the then later on, the Malombo, the Philip Tavani, they came into the scene. The Johnny Foree, you know, you name them, the Dagitau, you know, they changed the whole entire scene. They changed the whole landscape of a jazz. And then, you know, we had like Umpatanga. You know, like there was a man who was very, very, very powerful before Max Mangwane, Almon Memela. Almon Memela, Max Mangwane, they came. Max Mangwane was born in 1939. But now, Almon Memela, he was born earlier than that. I don't have the year at the back of my mind. But he was born earlier than that because I had a privilege because I interviewed the family, I interviewed everyone, you know, who knew him. I mean, there was Vivian Ngubane. Vivian Ngubane, he was one of the kind of a special Mpaqanga. So now I documented their history, their biography, and also the style of the music, and also their technique of what their licks, what they used, their cliché. You know, I mean, like if you know, if you play, you know, like, Vivian Ngubane used to have all those. You know, and when you go to Chitsonga, there was another groundbreaking guy, groundbreaking guitar player by the name of M.D. Shirenda. Before the Thomas Chauke, the world they know Thomas Chauke, but M.D. Shirenda, he was dead. I mean, like the M.J. Samson, Mabasa, it was a kind of an evolution. Kwela as well, it had the their own guitar player, the Peter Kumalo, and the what's his name, General Duze, it was as well. So until then, you know, so the book covers and all the substyles from Maskanda African Jazz, there's African Jazz Part 2, the Electric Jazz, and then it covers Kwela music. And it covers also Chitsonga and Umpatanga.
Amazing. What do you think of the band Urban Village and what they're doing? Do you know Urban Village? And also, I also know that they're doing some documentary, they're doing some interesting, like sort of history of Maskanda documentary work on their social stuff, which is quite cool.
Well, I'm going to tell you how I feel about them, right? Yeah. I think I need to get a glass of wine, of whiskey, you know.
What you got there? Is that monkey shoulder?
Yes.
Ah, I recognize that bottle.
is the whiskey of the legends.
Give me 1 second. I want to see if they can bring me another one. I think maybe they're close. Yeah, it's all quiet out of there. I'm out of luck. Yeah,
you know, I don't know where to begin. For the past years, I've seen a couple of documentations. People they saying that they other people they're just saying that they want to document something for being relevant, you know. But when you look at the context and the content of what they're documenting and what they're presenting, it is not something worthwhile. It is a lie.
Why do you say that?
It is a lie. It's a lie. They document lies because they lack dimensions. They don't know history. It is not well researched. I've seen this. For example, if you go to YouTube and then you search for Maskanda guitar players, do you know how many Maskanda guitar players are there? But none of them, others they're out of tune, others they can't even play themselves, others they can't narrate the story, others they don't know the story. I mean, like in Maskanda, already in Maskanda, there are 11 sub-styles of Maskanda music, and they differ from each and every region. And I I can say this in confidence because I know them. I know them and I know their capabilities and I know how much their talent can get to. And I watch their journey of documenting, and I don't think that is substantial. And I'm sure they will punch me for this. They will punch me in the face next time they see me, but they need to do, they need to go straight deep in the ground about researching. Researching is not just about talking up with Pusi Kimizi. Pusi Kimizi, he came late. Talking about people who came before Pusi Kimizi, that is for me documentation. When you talk about Pusi Kimizi, Pusi Kimizi is like a Kwaito star of the Maskanda.
Mm. He's a pop star. He's the Maskandi pop star.
Yeah. Yes. He's a pop star. Mm. He's a pop star of Maskandi. You know, we need to speak about people like Petrus Mtambo. You know, like how far are they documenting this thing? You know what I'm saying? Unless maybe that is the plan. You know, and I've seen some tutorial videos on YouTube. People, they were saying that they're playing Mpakanga. I'm like, and I knew that, you know, one day I'm gonna write off all this nonsense that they try to create, because they don't really mean nothing. They don't have information in what they're trying to document. That's what I'm saying. We must not say we're documenting for the sake of seeking relevance. No.
Let me just play devil's advocate on this one, because you are, you've spent decades doing a super duper deep dive. So in this particular subject, you are the purist. You know, you are the jazz purist and the historian here. But, you know, the urban village, I mean, unless what you seem to be saying is there is some, the intent isn't right, or they don't have the right intent. But the things that they've done that are interesting to me is, like, they have taken this historic music and reinvented it in a way that's quite edgy and cool and current. So, like, they're actually creating a vehicle for it so that the world can hear Maskanda in a way that's palatable to people today. And for sure.
Yeah. There I'm with you 100%. You know what I'm saying? They are part of the revolution. They are part of the evolution. I respect them so much. In terms of artistically, what they're doing with the Afro rock kind of a thing, you know. I mean, like, remember Harare? Harare, it was like an Afro rock band, you know what I'm saying?
Still the hippest band that ever was. Even if they were to here today, they'd still be the coolest, hippest band in the world.
Yeah. So now when I'm listening to Urban Village, for me it's like a kind of a perpetuation of some Harare, you know, kind of shit, you know, and I'm like trying to find the depth of Maskanda in that, because I'm listening with the ear of a purist. Then for me that is not true, but if I'm listening with the ear of just having whiskey, that's fine.
Yeah.
But I have two ears.
Yeah. I get that. Yeah, I watch movies as a movie maker, and I watch movies because I like them. And I listen to music with music ear, and I listen to music that's trash, but I dig it, you know?
Yes, absolutely. So I mean, like, I hardly go to performances, gigs, because I don't want to end up complaining, you know? So I'm like... I'm going there. Oh my goodness. No, I'm not going there. So I'd rather I see it on YouTube or something so that I can live it at that moment when I feel like living it, you know, without being subjected to sit on the table. No.
You don't have to explain this to me. I'm a music snob as well, because I rarely go see, well, even before the pandemic, go see bands anymore, because I know they're all going to be the same. I know what I think I'm going to get there, you know, hard to impress.
Yeah.
But,
It's cool. No. I respect them. Believe me, I respect them. I respect the thing that they're doing. Like it's like a fusion of a rock, a rock and roll, and South African foundation of music. But in terms of documentation, when someone says that they are documenting, I really want to see documentation. Really,
yeah.
I don't want.
Look, you know, the thing is, again, I am defending them, actually. You know, there's such a huge, you know, here's the thing about any industry. In South Africa, we don't have industry. You know, we don't have a music industry. We don't have a documentary industry. And particularly for Maskanda, I'm like learning to say it the right way. There's between what they're doing and what you're doing, there's nothing in between you. So you are talking about the deep history of Maskandi. It's Maskanda. They are doing a light surf on the wave of like 2 inches deep. But there is nothing like there. No one is telling the story from their perspective or your perspective or all the depths in between. I think it takes lots of people to try and tell the story in their own way to actually make an impact, you know? If that makes any sense, I don't know.
Yes. Well, I think that's where we are, you know?
That's where we are.
There's
no one else is doing it.
Yeah, they're purists, and they are those guys who just come and, yeah. You know, just to be there for the part of being for the sake of it. When I started out doing the research and documentation, there was no one was doing it. No one. I still say today, there's no one was interested in doing that. But nowadays I see there's so many people now, everyone wants to go back to their roots, you know, because I think maybe it's just a matter of a subject to say, oh, we want to be sound like an African. I want to go back to my African roots, you know. But at the same time, you were never baptized. You were never indoctrinated with those roots. You find yourself swimming between the roots and the urban, you know. That is why they're urban village, you know. But anyway, so now someone asked me in the workshop that I did, they said to me that, so when are you talking about Jimmy Dludlu? When are you talking about Oligom Tukuti? And I realized that, like, okay, you know, these people, they're asking because they are seeing a gap or they're seeing a space that I'm not talking about these people. And I said to them that it's not the right time, you know. I'm saying, for me to present a documentation, I really mean it. When I speak about Jimmy Dludlu, I will tell you from every note, everything that he does. I will tell, when they speak about Oliver, I will tell you about everything. So in terms of documentation, the word documentation, maybe it is ambiguous, you know. It is open to many discussion. What is documentation? Because someone else can say, ask me, Billy, why is Madala Kunene not part of this? But Madala Kunene is a baby from what we're trying to achieve here, you know. We will feature him on the second volume. And on the second volume, I will do the respect. I will go to Madala. I will sit with him down. I will, you know, so that when I present this, you cannot go to one source and then you say that you have done a documentary. No, that is nonsense. Because I know urban village where they get all this thing. They get this thing, all this thing is hyped up in there in Soweto to buy the thing, and then they wanna come. No, I know Madala Kunene, he hangs out with them there. But now it's not sufficient. I want to live in Kwanongoma. That's where I learned Maskanda. I live in Nanda. In Nanda, that's how I got this music. I learned this music from there. And I didn't want to be the one who's telling the story. That's when I invited the guy who specialize in this kind of music to give depth in it than me telling you. So this documentation thing is very, it's very ambiguous. I'm so sorry. I have no sweet words of it.
I love it. I love it. Let me ask you to, our time is kind of up for this show, but I think we'll do a few of these, so I'm not worried. But I want to ask you, coolest legend that you've met, followed by the legend that was a dick.
The coolest legend of
coolest. Okay, so let me rephrase that so we don't. Is it coolest legend meeting experience and worst legend meeting experience?
The coolest legend I've met was Hostix Mabuse.
Well, he's a beaut. I want to steal everything. He's got that Harari room in the like the sort of studio space. He's got all that Harari merch. I want it all. I want to take it. The photos, the posters, the gold disc. I want them.
for many years, I've been working with that man. You know, like even when I came to your studio, I was with him. You know, for many years, I've been working with him. And our first encounter was not great. You know. Because we fought, we used to fight like for remunerations. You know, remember me, I read a lot and I'm a well-informed musician, you know, so business for me, it is very important. And when first we met, we were not inclined in terms of business, you know, because for me, it's not about getting on stage and getting money go. I'm like, this money, what's gonna do for me? You know, I'm saying I know my value. At that time, I was professional. I was like, I knew my value, and I was But later, after a year, we became friends. We are friends. Actually, I was speaking to him today. I was speaking with him yesterday. You know, that's how much. If I don't call him in a week, he will just send me a message like, "Billy, your silence is deafening." Like. Yeah, you know, so we are family. His kids, they say to me, "Billy, you know my dad's secrets. The day my dad die, you're gonna tell us all the secrets." So he has been amazing. And the worst legend I've worked with, Dorothy Masuku.
Tell me.
Oh man, she was a bully. She was bullying me around, you know. Because I was a kid, I think, but I was mad. I knew what was happening. It was not like I was impassive, you know. I was very passive. I knew what was happening around me. And today he will hear the guitar playing this. Tomorrow is like, no, the guitar is not supposed to play that. But I say, and then I'll argue that, look, I've recorded what you suggested I should play. I'm playing it. And then it's like, no. Don't play that. You're a child. And then, oh my goodness. And then I had to write an email to the management. I said, guys, I'm not coming anymore. I'm done with this woman. You know, at that time I called her this woman. I was fed up because, you know, for many years I've been playing with her, you know, when Themba Mokoena was not around. You know, and I played with Abigail Kubega. She was amazing.
I've worked with her and she is amazing.
She's a sweetheart. Now
she just wants to. Yeah, she just wants to work.
Man, she's just like, my darling, my sweetheart, what do you want me to do? You know what I'm saying?
Now, my darling, my sweetheart. That's exactly what she says, yeah.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. She calls me sweetheart, like my sweetheart, you know. And then and every time when I call her, it's like, hello, my honey, how are you? You know, so now, I mean, like... But to talk about the hardest person I've worked with, Dorothy Masuku, she is the one. I respect her. I respect her. And I respect the contribution that she made in this industry. But it was very difficult to work with her.
Amazing. Before I let you go, I want to just tell you one story that I think you'll appreciate. I went to... I was the only Mlungu at Kaifus's 80th birthday. I got invited to Kaifus's 80th birthday. It was one of the best concerts. Yeah, at the Market Theatre. Were you there?
No, I was, they came to, you know, to watch. I saw an ugly cake ever in my life. You know?
That giant king. I mean, the giant lion. It was like four people had to carry in.
A giant lion.
It was a huge, like, swing.
I hated that cake. My goodness. You know? Yeah, I was there. Yeah.
That concert was one of the best concerts I've ever seen, by the way. It was so amazing. Yeah. But I arrived there and I got there early and I went to sit in the theater and I was there totally by myself and I sat at the bottom and this, first of all, I went into the dining room where everyone was eating and this man who was sitting at Caiaphas's table saw me and he waved at me and I waved back and then I didn't know who it was, so I left. Then I went to sit in the theater and I was by myself in the front row just waiting. And that same guy came in and he walked straight up to me and he gave me a huge hug and he said, I can't believe you're here. I haven't seen you in so long. I'm so happy. And he sat next to me, started talking. I didn't get a word. He was like, I was so amazed to see me. And he told me at home, he's got a picture of both me and him framed on his wall. And he'd like for me to come to his house tomorrow and gift it to me. And by this time he'd been talking for like 10 minutes. I hadn't had a word. So I was just nodding, you know, I was like, okay, whoever this person thinks I am, let's go with it. So his wife comes. She's like, oh, you got to meet my wife. I'm so excited. And I'm deep in this shit. I'm like freaking out a little bit. And then he says to me, how's Barbara? So I was like, I don't know who the fuck Barbara is. So I'm like, Barbara couldn't make it. Listen, I'm really sorry. I've just got to go to the toilet. I can't wait to connect. So I ran to the toilet and I hid and I waited for the whole theater to be full, right? And then, and when I came back, there was only one available seat left and it was next to Caiaphas. And it was because the vice president was supposed to sit there, but he sat in the wrong chair. So there was an open seat there.
Yeah.
So Caiaphas said, oh, just come sit here. So I went and sit next to the birthday boy, right? Then I saw the guy at the front. He looked back and he saw me sitting and he was like, okay, so it reconfirmed I'm this important person who I am not. I don't know who he was. Anyway, when I left that, I didn't know what it was. And I asked later, who was that guy? And weirdly, I can't remember his name. I tried to find him for a long time for a project I was working on. It's that guy who's the last surviving member of the Manhattan Brothers. I think I know, and I was so embarrassed, and I was like devastated when I found that out, and I don't know who, I never know to this day who he thought I was, but it was, I could have, I don't know.
I don't want to mention the name of the Malaysian brother, the lasting member of Malaysian Brothers, because I was reading a book, I think like a day ago, and and I'm just not sure which one is still alive, you know what I'm saying? And I know the person when I can see, you know,
yes,
when the old man, yeah.
Wow. Anyway. Yeah. Oh, well, I know I've always felt bad, like I'm going to go to my grave full of guilt.
As a listening member, so now, listen, I want to tell you something. We need to do something now. There's a last member of the Big Dudes, David Mabaso. We need to do something.
I've seen him. I've got his number. I want to do some work with him because he still plays like a beast.
Let's do that shit while time is now. Yeah. Well, we got to talk a lot of shit. You know, there's so many people who are like last members of some shit, you know. So.
And they those numbers are getting smaller and smaller every day. It's now absolutely. Or never, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So listen, Billy, this is the initiation call, right?
Yeah.
We're officially friends now, okay? We've had a whiskey and we've shot the breeze. So
I'm eating water now.
So after this, let's connect and let's make something happy. I would love to. I really feel like there's a powerful thing going on here.
We're gonna make magic, not gimmick. You know, we're gonna cancel everything that everyone tried to do instead. No. Trust me, we're gonna because I've done my research and I've seen what people they produced in terms of documentation. So we wanna put it on the highest level that anyone tomorrow wants to take a chance, they think twice.
Love it. Love your work. Have yourself a great evening, Billy, and thanks for chatting on What's Your Poison, man. I've loved this. I mean, this has been one of my favorite chats.
Thank you so much.
And I like that it's just the first one. I'm gonna call it Volume One.
Okay. Cool. I think maybe next time I must ask Orange M to give me a purple M.
Nice.
Okay, cheers.
Cheers. Take care, Billy. Have a good evening.
Okay, cheers. Bye.
If you enjoyed this episode of What's Your Poison, you're pretty cool because it was fucking great. Do us a favor and subscribe either on the Apple Store, the Spotify Store, wherever you are. Leave a comment, please. Let me say it again, because you probably just skipped over it. Just leave a comment because it helps with the ratings and I would appreciate it. Also, go to johnsavage.com if you want to see all the rest of the episodes or subscribe to my newsletter. The end.